So my name is Mark Reed. I work for a company called Sequence Advisors. We're based in Berkeley, California. And today we're going to talk about project report cards. We're going to talk about evaluating project managers using statistical methods. So we'll talk a little bit. I'll give you a little overview of what my careers look like. And then we're going to talk about the controversy that is this subject. I don't think any of you should get involved in this type of thing without knowing that you're going to get an inordinate amount of hassle. Most companies have really struggled with this. So, eyes wide open. This comes out of a lot of work that I've done in trying to simplify the process of being in control of projects. There's a basis for this. There's a ton of information out there, best practices, people who are smart, people who have led the way. So we'll talk about some of those. We're going to talk about the metrics that you use to look at these schedules. So if you've got to look at hundreds and hundreds of schedules over time, you need some automated ways to do that. So we're going to talk about what that basis is. Then we'll talk about the method. Putting it all together, trying to arrange it such that you can make sense of it and make good decisions. And then we'll talk about what are some of the results, what works, what doesn't work, where has this succeeded and where has this failed, and we'll talk about how maybe you'll learn that there's some good things to come out of this. So I've been working on this for a long time. My first job, on the first day, my boss said to me, "You can't bullshit a bullshitter." And I've been thinking about that for a long time around how do we evaluate and how do we get to the truth of things when project managers and when people have lots of different opinions. And there's a lot of feelings about, well, I'm doing great. Oh, I'm not doing so good. How do you cut through the noise? So, anyway, let's get started. There's been a lot of press here, and there's in the concept of evaluating people and using scorecards and you generally find that organizations, they go in, they go out, they embrace it, they backpedal. And so if you're looking to get into this, you should be aware that you're going to catch a lot of flack. You're not in this business to make friends, let's put it that way. Professor Sutton had a very interesting comment. There are side effects to performance evaluations. And my opinion, there are some good side effects which you should be able to leverage for training. Okay? So it occurs to me that if you're going to do this, you have the opportunity to help people, to train. Now, when you're looking at schedules, you can look at them through lots and lots of different lenses. Okay? Some of those lenses are the metrics. Some of those lenses are broken down, basically, you've got scheduling ones, you've got resource ones, you've got earned value, you've got tons and tons of these metrics available to you, and the schedule tells you this. You should be able to look at a schedule and be able to see that there is a wealth of information there that tells you how we're doing. Some of the scheduling metrics that I think are important is the concept of slack. Okay, so as the schedule is put together, the question is it going to react in a way? Do you have a critical path? You know, sometimes when you link a schedule together, it seems like it reacts like a slinky. You know, it's like a rubber band. It's constantly changing. You're putting data into it, and it's providing you a forecast. So measuring slack, measuring whether you've got too much or too little, helps you to understand whether that schedule is going to react well to change, whether it's going to give you an accurate forecast. I don't know whether many of you have seen this book, but Eric Utewald's downstairs. He's been dealing with forecast scheduling, dynamic scheduling before that, for many, many years. And reading that book really changed the way that I think about schedules. Now, if you have looked at his latest work, he's got 81 different metrics. That book I'm happy to give to someone that can suggest a really, really bizarre metric. I would be very happy to talk about that. But you can tell from some of the work that Eric's done around critical path, slack, but also task size. You know, are your schedules monolithic? Are your tasks too big, too small? And you should be able to talk to project managers about that. You should tell them, no. You don't have to have a task that's 15 minutes long. You know, you don't have to have a task that's 3 months long. That's too big. Task decomposition is a real art form, and it's something that project managers don't spend enough time with. Baselines. Baselines are very important. You don't have a baseline, you don't have a plan. You need to have baselines in your schedule to be able to understand your performance. Work in the past or in the future. Are the project managers not maintaining their schedules? And are they, using percent complete to move stuff into the future? It's a real problem. So some of the key things that you want to make sure of when you're managing many, many, many schedules. So I have a question for this audience. How many of you have managed schedules that or portfolios that are worth $1 million? Excellent. How many of you have managed ones that are $1 billion? Excellent. Okay. So when you're dealing with a lot of money, you need to make sure that you're getting what you're spending. So a good hard look at your scheduling metrics will give you a higher confidence level that you are actually getting some bang for your buck. So there's other ones: critical path, deadlines, deliverables, task state. There are a bunch of good formulas out on the internet that will basically tell you whether your tasks are stale or late start or completed or in progress, and that's good. Are there any scheduling metrics that anybody is interested in or has had good success with? Yes, sir.
Percentage of milestones to tasks.
Percentage of milestones to tasks. That's a good one. So are you...
I've seen people who schedule 25% of the schedule of all milestones.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Another one I like is tasks that have a predecessor that started, and therefore the finish date of the successor task is started, therefore the finish date of the successor has no impact on the schedule.
Yeah. Yep, there are lots of them out there, and they're worth collecting, and they're worth measuring. There's also a lot of resource metrics out there, okay? So how many of you have seen schedules where people are working 200, 300, 400%? The worst I ever saw was 420,000%. And you get a sense that, are we really going to be able to do that? Too many assignments, people, tons and tons of people on the same task. The issue with that is there's no accountability. There's no way to get that complete. Especially when you're doing time tracking out of schedules, okay? So you're broadcasting tasks to your task sheets, your timesheets, and you're getting actual work back in. That's a great, great feature of Project Server and provides you with a great deal of control over what's going on. But if you have 300 people on a task, half of them are not even going to even see it. Peak units exceeding 200, less than 10%. Generics. How many of you use generics in your planning? Do generics get actual work done? So, something to think about. Earned value. Earned value is very, very helpful for controlling the middle of a project. It is a derivative metric. It requires you to have baselines. It requires you to have costs in those baselines to be tracking actual work. Completion. But when you're doing earned value on a project server, you have some special considerations. You can't aggregate it up very well. You've got to measure it right up at the top and redo those calculations. And then earned value is relative to your status date. So every time your project changes, your earned value changes, and that's good. But what if you wanted to understand what your earned value was a month ago? Are you getting better at tracking your earned value? So how do we fit it all together? The nice thing is that Project and Project Server has a very great data model that allows us to relate all of this information together. And to do it well, you need to know joins. I've had the pleasure of working with a SQL developer for the past 10 years, and he understands left outer joins and right inner joins, and that's very helpful. One important thing is that projects have to have owners. People have to take ownership of it and maintain them. But one thing that is a challenge is keeping a history of these metrics, because project tends to be as of right now, and that's what it is. Now, part of this came from a my manual process, checklists. You know, you don't want garbage in, garbage out, so you spend a lot of time with schedules. I was at one customer where they had 60 or 70 different project checks. And that was great, but you only did it once, and then you never did it again because it was took hours to get it done. So, and it's not scalable. If you're going to do it 2 hours per project times 100 project, that project manager is going to be doing nothing else but evaluating schedules. So, the other thing that you can do, and this is something that I think is really worth considering, is making your baselines representative of particular slices of time and use your baselines. Now, there's been a fair amount of performance studies showing that when a project has more than 7 baselines, the performance goes down. And to that I say, well, go get some solid state disks and get yourself some more memory, and you know, you'll be fine. But the idea with this baseline is that if you're looking at a large portfolio, you have two different sort of problems. One is, how am I going to deal with that portfolio over quarter over quarter? And so I want to know how my portfolio is doing Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4. But you also have a methodology, probably with 4, 5, 6 phases in it. And you need to understand how your portfolio is doing on a phase basis. So, do I have 5 projects that are doing really well in design, but when they get to build, there's a problem? Do I have problems with testing, expanding? So, if you align some of your baselines at your phase gates, then you can say, well, we know what it looked like then. And that's very helpful. I would, if you're going to do time tracking out of a schedule, I would dedicate a baseline for weekly overwrites. So that every week, before you do time tracking, you understand what changed in that schedule. And then you may want to reserve one for finance use. So that being said, you have a method for sort of keeping track of your portfolio over a historical basis. Okay. So here's an example of a report. Uses a little bit of conditional formatting. And it basically runs counts of, if I've got 100 tasks or 552 tasks, how many of them have negative slack? Negative slack is telling you that maybe I'm not going to make my timeline. So you can color code some of it to be able to tell you where you've got issues. Like, we certainly have a baseline problem with this portfolio. Uncompleted work in the past, not a problem. People are maintaining their schedules, that's good. But a little bit of task decomposition with the task duration too big, too small. Now on the right, some of these are resource metrics. A little bit hard to read, a little bit hard to be thinking of, but as you look into a schedule, you can press a button, have this run, and then be able to give feedback to owners. Or you can provide a drill down so that you can, a sub-report to that, so you can actually go down and get a list of the tasks that are, problematic. That way your PMs can fix their own stuff. So that's very helpful. You definitely need to have documentation on your corrective actions. So what do you do when you have a tasks that are too big? What do you do in a negative Slack situation? So training is really critical to this process. Now, if you're going to look at this over the course of months and months and months with longer running programs, you're going to have to store these metrics in a history table. And the history table is just flat with unique ID, timestamp, and then you store your metrics. This is very helpful for storing your earned value metrics, all of your metrics. This allows you to see whether or not you're getting better. Now you can prototype this in Excel, and when we first started this, pulling this together into Excel, the key thing with grades is you need to then assess, you need to provide a threshold. So a threshold is where is the line between good and bad? Then you give it a weight. How important is this metric to your organization? And frankly, over time, these are going to change because you're going to get better, and everybody's going to be doing great, and you want to move it so that you constantly are giving people challenges to move forward. Then you create your scale to about 100% or 4.0. You can map it to ABC. And then if you've put this all on a subscription, you can actually take snapshots and start to graph it. Now, what moves the metrics? What gets you progressing towards getting better? A couple of things. Training. The more you invest in your project managers, the better they get. That's going to provide you with this uptick. Culture. You have to deal with the cultural aspects of this. You have to talk about what it means to fail, what it means to be good at something, why it's important to improve. You provide some history. And last but not least, you have to be able to assess some accountability. And that's really hard for some orgs. Especially when you've diluted the organization to the extent that you've tried to scale it, and now you don't have the ability to hold each other. Highly matrixed organizations, very difficult to hold people accountable. This is where it starts to get interesting. When you actually associate a grade with a person, now they have two choices. They can tell you, That's not me. They can tell you that, well, my project's different. They can tell you the laws of physics don't really apply to them. But in fact, when you've got a large group of people, one of whom is in this room today, you can start to see how they're stacking up. Some of it, maybe they're on the right projects, maybe they're not. You can drill down and say, okay, for a given person, what are they having struggles with? How are they doing with their stuff? And so you can give them quantitative feedback on how to improve. I've been debating about why, you know, should we just make an app for this? Is this just an app? I don't think so. I think because to truly be successful with this, you have to think through the culture. You need to provide training. You need to have that history to be able to, you know, show people that they have improvements over time. And again, you can build accountability. I think there's a lot of results that can come out of a program like this. When you're spending a billion, you're accountable to a board. Your board wants to know what's going on. What am I getting for the money that I'm spending? And you can prove it to them. So you can increase the validity of your efforts. Second, you can open up a quantitative dialogue with your resources, with your project managers. These are the facts. These are the things we need to work on. This is where we're moving. And you can ease the cognitive burden of complex math. There's a lot of complexity behind this, and you can package it so it's a little bit simpler. So that's very helpful. Okay. Depending upon what environment you try to do this in, you may fail. So the leadership was doubtful, the playing field was tilted, the expectations were murky, and it was unsurprising, program failed. Another program succeeded, okay? The manager was totally on board. The manager wanted to make this happen. All the project managers knew exactly what was going on. They could see it. They could make it happen. Everybody had expectations. We're going to get better. If this was a culture of continuous improvement. And the surprising results were that people wanted to do it and they got better at it. And they got better quick. It's amazing. I don't think you can improve 20%. You might be able to improve 10%. 10%, it's a good number. So what's the point of all of this? Project schedules are not murky mysteries of meaningless minutiae. Even though many project managers will spend a lot of time telling you, oh, it's not me. You wouldn't know. How about this one? You can't handle the truth. Project managers are not mighty mavens of magical munificence. Trust me. The key point of all of this is we're all trying to work together. We need to provide excellent value to our management and to our teams. And you can see through the noise of a complex adaptive system and make decisions based upon quantitative information. Eric, Gary, Brian, Daniel Kahneman won the Nobel Prize for economics, but he's a trained psychologist talking about behavioral economics. He's got a great book out. You should take a look at it. Bill Ibbs at Berkeley has done a lot of great analysis, worth looking at his research. Your local project partner. How many of you work with project partners? How many of you are project partners? Okay. This is good stuff to know. I know I rushed through that, but I wanted to spend some time on questions. People have any comments, feedback on this stuff? Yeah, go ahead.
So, this is a pretty broad question, but so what's the right number of metrics to implement? So if you don't have, I'm sure it depends on the maturity level of the organization and they are in project management, but it seems like there's a ton of metrics you can put in. So do you start with everything as a baseline, see what's the worst, do you continue?
I would go a few to start, yeah. I would group them in scheduling, resource, cost, and go from there. Excuse me, three? I wouldn't go more than five. Once you go to like 10, you want to encourage accountability. One is ultimate. Yeah, over here. Good call. Well, I would talk with Eric about that. Eric has 81. Some of the ones during planning, I'm mostly focused on execution. But I think that you need to look at, one of the things I really like is phase expansion. So if you're measuring your phases and you see them over time start to expand and contract, that's really helpful. So I wish I could be more specific than that. Other questions? Yeah. Yeah, turn up the heat a little bit, I think that change management is hard. I think you need to think about that from a over time perspective. Treat it like a campaign. Start to work them. Start to develop this. you know, cultural change takes time, so you have to sort of focus in on some of the key wins, you know, try to get it, emphasize the positive and keep moving ahead. Behind in the red, you had a question.
And so you also grow up project managers internally from people who got things done, so they equate to project managers. So what you end up doing is, when you have better training, you're not only tools training, but you're trying to get them to understand that if they change X field, the impacts are because best practices under project management, not tool usage, are the problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and as I look at Microsoft's move into the cloud and the number of SharePoint partners that are getting into the project space, I think that we're going to see an overall dilution of maturity. And I think that it isn't simple. And what you could do, I mean, one of the things is there's a lot of intelligence in some of these queries, and by packaging them in simple fashion, by using conditional formatting, by summarizing the data and aggregating it, you can package it so that it can be more intelligible. And I think part of what I'm getting at with this methodology here is give people what they can understand. You know, you have to train to get them to a point at which they understand duration equals work divided by resource units, work equals actual work plus remaining work. There's some sort of key concepts that you need to introduce, but in the same token, when you're looking at a schedule from a 50,000 foot level, you want to know red, yellow, green, but you have to connect that red, yellow, green with the realities of the schedule. And so part of this is just one of the reasons why the focus is on BI is because BI allows you to package these metrics well so that they're more intelligible. So I think giving people what they can grasp is very helpful. Another question. So there are, most of the metrics are coming from the built-in fields. So what we're doing is just pulling out the results of those and then putting them into the spreadsheet and calculating the thresholds. You're talking about thresholds and weights and all of that stuff? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And yeah, it's helpful to store those in a custom field. So yes, you would probably open up some custom fields. And in the case of where you fully automate it and you drop it into a history table, yes, you're actually creating a whole set of, you know, fields in a database. I actually, at the end of this, I have some examples in an appendix of some of the queries, some considerations, and then how to sort of put it together into a framework by storing it in a history table. So, you know, that's that's, you know, an approach. Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm thinking of trying to ease into visible metrics by starting with innocuous summary reporting, just showing some summary details and then in the metrics.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the challenge with your summaries is, do you have a good way of aggregating it? So be very careful when you summarize that you're not introducing a mistake in the summarization. But yeah, you do have to summarize, and that's good. So, yes, in the back. Well, I think the question is, there are lots of external factors, and I totally get that. And I think the issue is raising this up in the awareness of the management and be able to provide a culture of transparency, a culture of expectations. One of the things that I find is that both at the management level and also at the board level, there's this lowered expectation of, we cannot do this. We cannot measure, we cannot perform, and so we won't. And I think that introducing something like this starts to get people thinking about better performance. So yeah, it is a complex picture with lots and lots of factors, human factors, but I don't believe that that's a adequate excuse to say that we can't get it done, that we can't improve, and that we can't have a way of diagnosing specific performance issues with regard to schedules. So I'm not talking about, you know, other metrics, but you could conceivably use this framework to bring other metrics in. Other questions? Yes, sir. You could do 4.0, you could do hundreds, you know.
Well,
yeah.
Here's the challenge I've always seen. Once you do that, everyone I know thinks they should be a B or an A Mm-hmm. How do you overcome that in the organization without hiding all that information from the people who don't understand?
Well, I think what the point here is that you are broadcasting this information. And what you'll find is over time, everybody will rise to the top, or will try to. And at that point, the system loses relevance. And so the only way to sort of keep it moving is start with some metrics and then change the metrics over time and then change the thresholds and the weights. Because at a certain time, you know, if everybody's an A, who cares? You know, but if you're making it a little bit harder, if you're expanding your focus so that you're giving people more challenges, that's a good thing.
So in your system, everyone could be an A. So it's not a comparison, not comparing everyone together. You're measuring to a specific form.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that there are best practices out there, and we want to adhere to them, but we may do that over time, and we have to be able to track our progress, and that certain pieces of those matter more at certain times. You know, when you come up the maturity scale, you may want to focus on scheduling metrics first. Then as you start to get into resource management, you want to, you know, start to emphasize those. And then cost management. So you've got to keep raising the bar. This is not a single hurdle. It's a journey down a track with thousands of hurdles. So, yes, sir. Yeah. So you tell people that you're changing, and the reason why you're changing is because you want to get better. And so, yes, there is a concern that, you know, it's not fair. You can't compare, you know. It's a smokescreen. You can compare, you can track, and you can get better. So, yes, sir. I would, if it's all red, it's all red. It's unlikely to be. I mean, people are probably good at something. We should hope. So.
How long have you been doing this?
A long time. Treb. Right. Yeah. Absolutely. That's good. Thanks, Treb.
And we gave that to the project managers for their use. Instead of the PMO using that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in a transition, I go along with Trev. If it's something that's not a gotcha, but something that actually is helping them,
yeah,
make the job better.
Yeah, and that's where I totally agree. The training and the culture, the attitude is so important, because people will fight you, and that's not the dynamic you want to build. Absolutely. Any other questions? Yeah.
Yeah, and building off of, again, what you said there, that was a good analogy to Fitbit. I just got one myself a few weeks ago. You have to want to improve, though. You know, I got it because I want to get in better shape and I want to track how many steps I do each day and so on and so forth. If I didn't care, I wouldn't spend the money on it, or, you know, I wouldn't be looking at it. Rolled out gradually in conjunction with some training.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, if I were to do this, I might try it by doing all right, let's focus on, like, one or two things right now and show them those techniques. Okay, and now go off and do it, and here's your little report card, or here's your little report, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe they see it, maybe they choose to share it with other people, maybe not, maybe it's up to them. But, you know, maybe you don't throw out there, you know, 27 metrics and, like, oh my God, look at all the red. Maybe do it gradually. Show them a few techniques,
yeah,
and then let them, you know, let them practice and see how they're improving, and then show them a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more.
Absolutely. That's good, Tony. Thank you. Anything else? Well, thank you very much for taking a look at this.